Welcome to the Couple Money Podcast, the show where we share stories and advice on building up your marriage and wealth. I'm Elle Martinez. Support for this podcast comes from Divvy Investments. How much do you hate losing money? I can't stand it, and it burns me even more when it's for needless fees. I work hard and I want my money to do the same. Investing in your 401k is a smart way to do that, but many times the options are a mess. That's where Divvy can help. Sign up, get assessed, and they will give you a model with specific low-cost index funds or ETF recommendations that fit you. And if your 401k doesn't have the options available, they'll tailor one based on what you do have. You continue to invest on your own, and they send you alerts when you need to rebalance. It's a win-win, the best of do-it-yourself investing with some guidance to help you avoid information overload. Divvy offers an affordable online subscription, and Couple Money listeners can save even more. Just visit divvyinvestments.com and use the coupon code COUPLEMONEY. Happy Monday. It's time for another Q&A where we dig in with an expert to get some insights on improving finances as a couple. For millions here in the United States, the floodgates will open this week. And if it's anything like years past, we'll see more than $50 billion spent just for Black Friday weekend. Enormous amount for sure. And about 31% will be using credit cards to pay for holiday shopping. There's a very good chance that there are couples and families who will miss their budget and overspend. That can be a recipe for financial disaster. But it doesn't have to be. Hillary Hendershot, founder and chief executive of Hillary Hendershot Wealth Management, is here to help us out. She's a fee-only fiduciary financial advisor who has worked with couples in helping them identify the psychological triggers with their finances and guides them towards better habits and building wealth. Today, we'll get into how fear of missing out can sabotage even the best budgets, how to set things up so you can get what you want without going broke, and how couples can meaningfully discuss what they want and work together on a plan. We'll start out with FOMO and some of its causes.
Yeah, so FOMO's fear of missing out. And I think we look around us and have you watched this television show called Suits? All yes. These lawyers, right? And they're so beautiful and they're all wearing Chanel suits and they're carrying Louis Vuitton bags. And I mean, they would have to make what a starting paralegal or attorney, I think they're in Chicago. You would have to make like five times a paralegal's salary to afford just the stuff that they wear on that show. And I think Hollywood is just one of the worst criminals when it comes to creating FOMO for people, because like we want to be like them, you know. And I think there's been someone once wrote an article about Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City. Mm-hmm. And maybe your male listeners probably didn't watch Sex and the City, but Carrie was a freelance writer in New York City, and she was known for having this just weakness for brand name, especially shoes, but clothes. She was all about the fashion, and physically impossible for her to have made enough money to actually afford the stuff that she had on that show. And these are the people that we look up to. I think, you know, keeping up with the Joneses is a real thing. If I see you enjoying luxurious trips and, you know, let's say you and your husband come over and you tell me about this safari that you want to go on, I think it's normal human nature to think I'm missing out on something.
Yeah. And I think part of it is driven because most people do have ambition and goals. And then when it turns into this, oh, but I have to follow it even though I don't have that foundation, whether it's finances or if you're in a relationship, you're not there at that point yet to make the next leap.
Right. I mean, discipline doesn't always feel good. And psychologically, what the context you create for that discipline can really have a big impact on whether or not you actually fulfill on it. So if discipline feels like scarcity or doing without, then you're going to want to rebel from yourself, from the rules that you made for yourself. And especially in a relationship, let's say one spouse is more committed to saving than the other. I mean, I see these couples in my office all the time. He's more committed to saving maybe than she is, and she doesn't see the point of saving so much money. And so, you know, that just kind of opens up the door for FOMO spending.
Yeah.
And she wants a big rock on her finger.
So how would you advise them as a couple maybe to start having that conversation?
Let's say you find yourself spending, and if you really have like a spending hangover the day after, right? You look at the things that you bought, maybe they're not getting used, or worse, they're sitting in the trunk because you can't show your spouse that you bought them. I think that you really kind of you have the opportunity to say, like, maybe I have a problem here, and to be, you know, kind of honest and transparent about it. Dan Ariely on my show the other day, I interviewed him. He's an economist who talks a lot about irrationality and how we as human beings don't always do what's in our own best interest. And he said, look, having a healthy financial life, like making the best choices for you with your money, is a function of knowing every opportunity cost that's out there. You know, Elle, it would be like if you want to spend $100, you would have to evaluate every item that's out there in the world that you could purchase with that $100 and really understand, like, if I save this today instead of spending it, what is it likely to be worth in the future? And it's just impossible for us to wrap our brains around what that looks like. And so we have to make these short-sighted decisions. And so just being really, I guess, adult enough to say, I don't think I made my best decision with these dollars.
Yeah. One of the signs FOMO is there and you're overspending. Are there any other signs that people should look out for?
When people come to me and they have expenses on their line item sheet or on their budget or, you know, in their bank account, you know, and I'm the last person to judge what you're spending on. But the question is, does it work in your plan? And let's see, some of the most common things I see with this kind of justification are really expensive things for your job or private school for the kids. That's a big one. And people will say to me, Hillary, I have to spend this money. Like, it's justified. It's reasonable. Like, I can't have the life that I want to live without spending this money. And spending on children is a big, big bucket that this kind of spending goes into. And that's kind of like, you have to think about it like, okay, so, you know, maybe I'm rationalizing this spending. I mean, it isn't true that you have to spend the money, because if the money wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to spend it. So you have to be willing to look at all of your expenses as though they're on the chopping block. If something is an obligation, then you have to recognize there's something going on there kind of psychologically. Also, there's the kind of person who they have really good intentions. Set up the system so that they're paying themselves first, which means they transfer money in to the savings account on the first of the month, and then by the 20th, that money is getting pulled right back out. So you're making a plan, or you're making deals with yourself, and then but you always break them. And that typically is because it gets to when the rubber meets the road, and, you know, if it's in the context of deprivation or scarcity or doing without, and all you have to do is go transfer money, you're probably going to do it. And let me say one more thing, so we're kind of clear what I mean by having something be in the context of scarcity or deprivation. I created, when I transforming my financial life, my money, I created a game for myself. So it didn't, for me, not spending on lifestyle or consumption items did not feel like scarcity. It was more like a contest. In my contest, I could have anything that I wanted. if I just waited long enough. And so if I wanted to buy something and it was going to take me 6 months to save up for it in my little savings account that I have my little splurge savings account, and I would be proud of myself. I would be excited. I would be waiting for the time to pass. But when I was able to make that purchase and it was in line with my plan, I was so happy and so proud and so much appreciated that item. I was able to create an experience for myself that was inspiring and enrolling so that I wasn't tempted to do FOMO spending.
I love that. I love that idea, having that savings account for those natural desires, but not sabotaging yourself.
Oh my gosh, you have to have a little bit of luxury in your life, and it doesn't have to look like society says that it has to look. For example, you know, I don't think you need name brand clothes to be successful at all. Sure, you need classy clothes and professional clothes or, you know, well-made clothes, but they don't need to cost $350 for an item. Not to say I haven't paid that much for an item. I'm just saying it's not necessary. And certainly if you're digging yourself out of debt, I mean, unless, you know, buying that Chanel coat, unless it makes you feel like $1 million month after month, then that's not what's going to be at the top of your wish list, your luxury list.
Yes, I agree. And you deal with women, but you've also seen men. They have their own weaknesses. Is there any particular categories you notice with men in FOMO?
Cars. I mean, come on. If your buddy has a Porsche, you want a Porsche. And unfortunately, men's FOMO items are typically way more expensive than women's FOMO items. I mean, you know, you can buy a lot of Chanel clothing for what someone can buy a Porsche for.
Yes, but I mean, it does go to show that couples and spouses, we kind of laugh at the other side, but to identify our own weaknesses does take an amount of self-awareness. So say a couple is realizing not keeping our budget, and they're digging deeper and they notice that both of them are guilty of this. Mm-hmm. How do you suggest they start to resolve this?
That's tough. The process of becoming financially mature is so much the process of becoming humanly mature, right? You can't do like one without the other. So you're a team, and you can't create money as scarce or a scary place or a point of contention, or it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be enjoyable. And even if you are able to produce the numbers that you want, you still won't have the life that you want. I mean, ultimately, all of life is a game anyway. So try to keep it as light as you can. Recognize that if you do go there, if you do criticize your partner, come down on hard on them, you know, they're going to react. They're going to be defensive, or they're going to be indignant, or they're going to start hiding from you, or they're just going to feel really criticized and small. And none of that is going to produce the outcome that you want. So I think if you can get back on the same page in terms of, yes, this is the number that we said we would spend, or I mean, let me start with plan A. Look, it's always my favorite plan. Mm-hmm. Is if you have a $30,000 a year golf habit, then if the agreement you can make with your spouse is, I'm going to go negotiate a $30,000 a year raise, or I'm going to have a side hustle that earns $30,000 a year, like I'm going to pay for it, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that because I think the more you can train your brain to be a brain that brings more money into the ecosystem, the closer you're going to get to true financial freedom, and the more likely it is that those numbers are going to grow and grow and grow. So I always love raising the ceiling rather than lowering the floor. But I think sometimes, so let's take golf as an example. You have to know your weaknesses. You have to know, you know, if I go to the Inn at Spanish Bay, or what's a famous golf course, you know?
Pinehurst? in North Carolina. I'm in North Carolina. That's the only one I know.
Oh, is that right? Okay, great. You know, if I'm hanging out with my buddies at the bar there, I'm likely to buy 18 holes, right? And I'm just saying, be careful where those potholes are on that road that you walk down that's dangerous. So maybe I had better instead be a golf pro at the local driving range, and then I can hit a few balls after I make $50 or something. I like to stay out of dangerous situations, in other words. I think as a couple, it would be really great if you could spend time talking about what you want to do with your money in the future, like just so that you can really get related to your future self. I mean, I saw there's a new tool that, now I don't want this for my accounts, but there's a tool now that when you log in to see your money, you either see a picture of your children or you see a picture of yourself aged 25 years.
What?
I was reading about this and I was like, I thinking, okay, interesting. I don't want that personally, but the point is so that you can get related to A, what's important to you, your children, like your children are counting on you, they need you to pay for their lifestyle, for their college, or B, your future self. So if you're not a person who's naturally inclined to think about the future, it can really be a great exercise for you and your spouse to sit down and say, okay, let's fast forward the clock 25 years. Right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe we're 60 years old. Where do you want to be? Like, you know, our health isn't what it used to be. You know, where do you want to be? What do you want to be doing? And, you know, at first, maybe your mind's going to go blank. But if you continue or persevere in the exercise, maybe that day or maybe over time, pretty soon you're going to get a grasp on, like, time is passing. You know, I mean, I turned 40 this year. And it's interesting to think, okay, my 20s are gone. My 30s are gone. It's really interesting. Like, I'm not young, but on any traditional scales anymore. And it's fine. Like, I love aging like fine wine, and some of my favorite people are in their 60s. It's not like I don't mind all that. It's just I'm getting related to, okay, I have now at this point in my life made some choices that are irrevocable. I can't take them back. And I'm not saying I would want to, but if you can put yourself in that position, what are the choices that you would have wanted to make? And for example, if you eat a whole pizza tonight, that's a choice you can take back, because you can exercise every day for a month. You can eat chicken and vegetables every day for a month and your body will recover fully. But imagine if you couldn't. Right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if you knew that the repercussions of your choices today, this year, next year, were going to be with you forever. What choices would you want and wish for yourself to make? And I think that's a really interesting conversation to be in for couples, because so many people end up in my office and I say things like, where do you see retirement happening? Well, we don't know. And what do you want to do with your time in retirement? Well, we don't know. And when do you want to stop paying for your husband's brother to live in that apartment in, you know, Georgia? Well, we don't know. I mean, I just made that up. But people get themselves into situations with an indeterminate end point. And life at some point will force you to make a choice. But if you postpone making that choice until life forces you to make a choice, then it's really out of your control. And so you have the opportunity to say, okay, we're not going to put off making a decision about this anymore. Like, let's actually put a stake in the ground. And I mean, I can tell you, it takes me sometimes being willing to sit in silence and with the uncomfortable questions to say, okay, look, we actually have to choose. I actually need an answer to this question, and it's okay that you don't have it right now, but let's talk about it until we can come up with something. And it can be a range of options in this moment, but pretty soon we actually need a definite answer. And it makes people uncomfortable, but it's so good for you because you can finally plan.
Thanks again to Hillary for today's discussion. So many great topics to consider. I couldn't fit it in all this week, so next Monday we'll wrap this up. If you want to learn more before then, though, please visit hillaryhendershot.com. And for those that want to hear more, she has a fantastic podcast, Profit Boss Radio. I'll have all the links up in the show notes, along with the resources we mentioned. And thank you to our sponsor. Please check out Divi when you have a chance. Their support helps keep this show running, and they offer a fantastic service with your 401k. Our theme song was written and performed by Gentle Regime. And finally, big thanks to you. Your support means so much. I hope you have a wonderful week. Please take care.